Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Because you're worth it, proclaims the classic cosmetics ads. Just do it, implores the global sports retailer. Everywhere we turn, we are constantly encouraged to experience as much as possible for as long as possible in as many ways as possible. FOMO, fear of missing out, has become a central preoccupation in a world fixated on the never-ending pursuit of gratification and self-fulfillment. But this pursuit can become a treadmill leading nowhere. It is the subject of The Art of Missing Out by Svend Brinkmann. And Svend joins me live on the line from Denmark. Good morning to you, Svend.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. So we are constantly told that we have to be involved, that we have to be doing more things, buying more things, being more things. Why do you think this is a bad thing?
It's a bad thing because so much psychological research now demonstrates that it's really making us miserable. We tend to think that more choices will make us happier, but it's actually very often the opposite that will happen. If you have more choices, you will become unhappier. But the problem is that we live in a consumer society and we live with all sorts of digital technologies and social media and so on. That it has become very difficult for us to focus and to miss out, as I like to put it. So we need really to practice the art of self-restraint, the art of missing out, and that's what my book is about.
But surely, I mean, in this wonderful technological world where we can be in touch with our neighbours, our friends across the world in nanoseconds because of social media, because of Instagram, because of Facebook, and we get to see the lives of people who are doing well, shouldn't we be aspiring to be like the people that we see living such full lives?
Well, I think we have very unrealistic images of what a full, happy and flourishing life is. I think if we are infected with this FOMO mentality, the fear of missing out, we are constantly in doubt about our own lives. Am I really doing the proper thing? Do I have the right job? Am I married to the person that is really the one for me? And so on. Of course, sometimes we can pose these questions and make an important decision in our lives. But if we constantly pose these questions, if we constantly reflect on ourselves and our lives, our relationships, then we end in a tragic situation. We end in a tragic treadmill where we just want more, more, more. And we are never really satisfied with what we have. And in a very strange way, not being satisfied is actually what society now wants us. To be one of us, because if we're happy, if we're satisfied, we'll really just stop, pursuing the next thing, the next big car, the next big house, the next, romantic affair. We'll be happy with what we have. And this, for human beings, is a good thing. But for a consumer society that is more or less out of control, it's a bad thing.
I mean, you've called this, which I like, the idea of the hedonistic treadmill. We adapt mm-hmm. very quickly, and then we want the next new thing.
Yeah, the hedonic or hedonistic treadmill is about, it's sort of a tragic fact of psychology that we have discovered that when people achieve something that they really want and long for, it gives them a very, very quick and momentary feeling of satisfaction. And then we become used to that. And then we need something more and something else to achieve the same burst of happiness or joy, if you will. This is very good, the hedonic treadmill, if we talk about, you know, bad things happening, because we will quickly bounce back to sort of a baseline level of happiness. But it's not a good thing when we tell ourselves that life is all about, you know, these fantastic experiences that really gives us joy all the time. And if we don't have these in our lives, then we do something wrong. So we chase these peak experiences all the time. And it's really a treadmill because it will never end. and it, in the long run, and perhaps not in the long run, but also in the short run, it will make us unhappy. And we need to break this logic of more, more, more. We need to step out of the treadmill and understand the importance of appreciating what we have instead of always chasing something more.
I mean, in your book, and you're a psychologist, so you're a cultured man, shall we say, you quote Aristotle about moderation in all things. It's strange to go back to the classics to find something to deal with a 21st century problem.
Yeah, fortunately, Aristotle is very much in line with contemporary empirical research. And there might be a reason why we still, some of us still read Aristotle, namely that he had actually discovered something true about the human condition that we have just forgotten about. And it's important for me to emphasize the idea of moderation, because when I write about the joy of missing out, it's not about doing as little as possible. It's not about, you know, being an ascetic or, you know, some anorexic, masochistic type of person who wants nothing and does nothing. No, it's about doing everything in moderation. Not too much, but also not too little. And how do we find this balance in a world that is just encouraging us to consume and experience more and more? That's my question. And I think we need to do something as individuals. Obviously, we can all do something to focus more on our lives and to miss out on the things that distract us. But I think we also need to approach this issue collectively as a society and ask, how do we want our schools to look? How do we want our workplaces to look? If we are to practice this art of self-restraint that I think is a valuable element in a key element in a happy life.
But it's very difficult because we live now in a world where we are bombarded with images, officially, yeah. i.e. via the advertisers and via media, and if you like, unofficially, by the people that we follow on social media, who are, and as we know, on social media, 9 times out of 10, we always present our best life. Nobody very rarely puts, you know, Monday morning and I've got nothing in the fridge. It's always Monday morning and I'm on a beach in Cancun with my perfect girlfriend and I'm just going to take my Mercedes out and here's a lot of money. So we are constantly bombarded with our best life, and then we are given tips on how to get that best life by signing up for this program or doing Bitcoin or whatever it is. So how do we, when we are, you know, faced with this tsunami of imagery saying be your best, be at this event, do that, how do we take that pause and disengage?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There has been a trend also on social media to present the imperfect life or the not so perfect life. But even that quickly becomes a trend, you know, where there are certain rules that apply concerning how your imperfection should look like. You know, not any kind of imperfection is good enough. Even that becomes an aesthetic, you know, a way of presenting yourself in a good life, in a good light, even if you try to, you know, to be imperfect. So, I mean, as a sort of utopia, I think we would need to simply go against this and perhaps close down our social media accounts. Of course, this is not going to happen. So instead, we need to think about how we will use them, how often we will use them, because it's also a matter of quantity. If we are constantly bombarded with images of beauty and perfection and we feel inadequate because we cannot live up to that, we are never, you know, given some time off just to be normal and be ourselves. So, and then we need to stop, all of us, you know, acting like little advertising agencies. Because you're absolutely right. It's not just the industry and the advertising agencies that, you know, present us with these kinds of images. We do it, all of us, present ourselves as little commodities, as little goods that we market and sell. And this is a very unhealthy approach to yourself and to your fellow human beings. It's sort of an instrumentalization of yourself. And I think this is actually the root of the problem. We need to understand, and of course now I'm just speaking in headlines, if you will, but we need to understand that humans have intrinsic value. You know, we're all good enough because we're human beings, regardless of, you know, the perfection that we lack, or, you know, whatever we may look like on social media. I know this is easier said than done, but if we don't say it and if we don't try to practice it together, well, then absolutely nothing will happen and things will only get worse.
Also in the book, you warn against, and I've seen this quite a lot on social media, it's what you call the elitist trap, which is...
Right.
Well, you explain what the elitist trap is.
Yeah, it's if someone like me who, you know, I'm now on the radio, I write books, I do talks, I pay my taxes. It's easy for me to say that we should miss out on more things, more relationships, more, traveling around the world and so on. It's easy for me because I have enough, I have more than enough, so I can actually do less without that hurting my life in any significant way. If I'm like most people, it will make my life better. But not everyone is like me. Not everyone is like most people. There are people with little resources, poor people, lonely people. So if we tell people without many relationships, lonely people, well, you should just, you know, concentrate on few relationships, they will say, but I don't even have a few. If we say, tell people with little resources, you should travel less, and they will answer, but I've never tried to travel, and so on. So the elitist trap is depicting the whole world as if everyone was, you know, like me, book writing, traveling, quite well-off people. So that's why, considering this elitist trap, give us reason to tackle this problem, address it collectively and politically, and not just individualize it and make it up to all of us. As I said before, certainly we can all do something, but if we're going to improve society and have a more sustainable life together, we need to regulate this through, and I'm sorry to say this, but I come from Denmark, you know, we pay really high taxes, taxation, you know, it's one way of solving it. Try not to have too unequal a society. These sorts of things will help us. And that is what the elitist trap is meant to remind us of.
And also the thing is, as you say, if when you're talking about fear of missing out, it's fear of missing out on this thing, that product. But if we do take stock, and as Aristotle, and I very rarely quote Aristotle, especially in a Monday morning, but if we do if we do miss out, have the fear of missing out, we can then put more into our personal relationships, our communities, you know, the things that matter. I mean, we speak about there's a saying, you know, don't let perfect be the enemy of good, and cultivate your own garden.
Yeah. No, this is a good point. I mean, we should not miss out on more stuff in order just to do it. It's not a goal in itself. It's a means to arriving at a life that is more fulfilling, a life where we can actually you know, concentrate and focus on the commitments we have, particularly to other people that are important. We have obligations, we have duties, and these things are not, you know, an obstacle to leading the good life. It's actually what the good life is about. Aristotle knew this, and modern, you know, psychological research shows it, that a good life for human beings, because we're a social species, it's actually about relationships. It's about caring for others. And so the main reason why we need to miss out on more is in order for us to be able to focus on these relationships and obligations that actually make up a full life. And if we ask people, these studies have been done, people on their deathbeds, literally, what do you regret, if anything? Well, most people regret spending a life, you know, just trying to make more money, working more, instead of actually focus on the relationships that they then realize are, you know, truly meaningful and what makes life worth living. So it would be good for all of us if we, you know, had came to that realization a little bit before, you know, the final day of our lives.
What inspired you to write this book now rather than a couple of years ago? Or do you think that we've reached, if you like, a jumping off point where we can go one way and become completely obsessed with being in the moment and being, you know, getting more and obtaining more? Or do you think this is the point where we go, okay, I'm taking that step back, I'm taking that breath, I'm taking that pause?
Right. Yeah. I think for me, I mean, it was an attempt to connect this, you know, discussion that we have about sustainability, the whole rhetoric of we have no planet B. We take nature's resources and really just, you know, consume them. And it will not, you know, last in the long run. To take that discussion and connect it to psychology, connect it to our lives as people, because it's exactly the same kind of thing. You know, we consider ourselves and others as resources that we use up, that we really more or less exploit and try to, you know, get as much as possible out of. And so for me, it was important to connect these two issues. So sustainability, I know some people hate this term and it's, you know, become quite fashionable and it's everywhere, but for good reasons. But sustainability is not just about, you know, nature and climate and environment. It's also about psychological sustainability. And it struck me, and I'm a professor of psychology and I teach my students, that we don't know anything about what that is. Well, we know a little bit, but we don't really teach it. We don't talk about it. And then I saw that, well, the whole Western tradition of philosophy, going back to Aristotle, now we've mentioned it many times here on Monday morning, but it makes me happy. But that was all about, you know, a sustainable life, a life of moderation, a flourishing life. We actually do know a lot about it if we only, you know, came to see it and talk about it again and rehabilitate this kind of knowledge. And it's more needed than ever, because if we understand that sustainability, a moderate life for human beings, is also a flourishing life, then we'll understand that there's much to gain by missing out, by living a more focused life, you know, where you can actually relate to other people, not as instruments or means for your own success, but because other people have intrinsic value and human dignity. And I mean, then I think we can see how these different discussions are actually tied together. And that will make it easier, I believe, to solve the climate crisis and create more sustainable societies. I mean, if we understand that it's not, you know, some terrible loss we are facing, there's actually so much to gain from living a more moderate and sustainable life.
But the thing is, of course, that we are human beings and we like the bright, flashy things. We like any addiction. We like the instant hit, the quick rush, rather than looking at the taking away and looking at the contemplation itself. So how would you suggest then that we as listeners, as a society, step away from that instant rush? Get rid of the FOMO. How? What would your first step be, please, Sven?
Well, the first step would be realize that we have a problem. It's like, you know, the 12 steps with Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever, all these programs. You have to understand first that you have a problem, and reflect on that problem, and then you can act, and then we can, you know, distinguish between what can I do as an individual, you know, from the smallest of things that sometimes turn out to be quite important, you know, not checking emails at night, you know, deactivate your notifications on social media, putting your smartphone away from your bed so you're not tempted to look at it. And then on the other hand, all the things we need to do collectively, how to organize families, schools, workplaces, and so on. And I think we really need to realize that we cannot solve this problem alone by individual willpower. I'm a great fan of Oscar Wilde, who once wrote that he could resist anything except temptations. And of course, this means the key is to create a world in which we're not tempted all the time. Because as long as we keep being tempted, all of us will eventually give in and do the things that we really shouldn't be doing. So create an ecology, create a landscape where you work, where you live, where you eat will be beneficial. So don't just think about your own inner strength and willpower and cultivate your mind, but think about the world that you're in, the relationships you're part of, and cultivate those. That would be my advice.
The book is called The Joy of Missing Out, The Art of Self-Restraint in an Age of Excess. It's by Sven Brinkman. It's out now on Polity Press. Sven, I was going to say if people want to follow you on social media, but it sounds a bit strange now after what we've just spoken about. But if people want to find out more information about you, how can they get in touch with you or find you?
Well, I am actually on social media. My Twitter account is Sven Brinkman. Just the one word, and I'm also on Facebook. On Facebook, though, it's mainly in Danish, but I know that Danish has become quite fashionable, at least in the UK, so maybe people will learn something from that. But it's true, it's a paradox. I use social media to criticize social media, but, well, you have to be where people are and do it consciously, and that's what I'm trying to do.
As long as there are no pictures of you with the Kardashians, I think we'll be okay. And, you know, I know several fashionable Danes as well, so that's not a problem. Only ask a question. After this, what are you up to next, Sven?
Well, I'm working on grief, which is something quite different in a way. But I'm interested in grief because it has now become a psychiatric disorder. And a diagnosis. And I think this is, so I'm working on that right now, trying to understand this. And although it may seem very different from what we just talked about, I think they're actually related because we diagnose grief after loss because we don't want people to miss out on the important stuff in life. But, you know, sometimes it's important to be able to grieve without considering it a psychiatric problem. So that's what I'm going to focus on next.
The book is called The Joy of Missing Out. It's by Sven Brinkman. It's out now on Polity Press. From Aristotle to the 12-step program, just your basic Monday morning conversation. Sven, it's been a pleasure to speak to you today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was a pleasure.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.